Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a podcast of Burn Orange Nation, and you can find more great Texas Longhorn content over at burnorangenation.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends wherever you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who's honestly okay with shooting six over on the last two holes, Kyle Carpenter. How are you?
Oh, I would kill for that, but I don't represent another Big 12 championship for the University of Texas men's golf team. Hey, look, Gerald, I'm not going to put anything squarely on their shoulders. They didn't realize it, but they were the start of a no good, very bad, rotten, whatever that saying is, week. We came on this podcast saying, man, things are looking up for all kinds of sports last week. We had sweeps all over the place. We had Big 12 championships. Last week was great. This week, maybe less great in six or seven different areas. There were still some good, but don't know if they realized the omen they were portending when we had the Big 12 championship and dropped it in two holes, playing basically like either Tin Cup, Jordan Spieth at the Masters, or myself on a Saturday.
It almost felt like all last week was when you walk outside and you know there's going to be a bad thunderstorm. You could just feel it in the air. You could smell it. Like, that's what being a Texas fan last week felt like. It felt funky. I don't know, it's the only way to say it. It just felt meh. And, well, the week bore out the meh feeling had.
Can you spell that? This is can you spell that for our listeners?
M-U-L-G-H.
Okay, fair enough.
Right. I'm teaching my kid phonics right now. I'm all in the sounding it out. Let's do it.
Love it.
No, but we're here to talk about all of the absolutely terrible things that happened this last week because, well, Kyle and I both were not here to kink shame, but maybe we're a little bit of masochists. Who knows? But Texas swept by Oklahoma State in baseball. This is a mixed news. Had a bunch of folks transfer out. We'll talk about why. We'll dive in more about that. But definitely missed in on a big transfer in. Texas also shut out of the NFL draft for just the third time since World War I, basically. Down the 40 with some better-ish news, but still not all great stuff today. And we'll close the show out with some bang the drum. So let's just rip this stupid Band-Aid off as early as possible. Texas lost to Sunday, and that led to the series sweep at the hands of Oklahoma State Cowboys. Texas had a shot to make up some ground in the Big 12 title race, but instead just handed OSU the clinch for that. Texas, for its efforts, dropped out of the top 25. Oklahoma State jumped five spots to number three. Just an ugly weekend for the baseball team overall. The bats were there, but the pitching, whether it was the starting pitching on Friday or the bullpen on Sunday, and then just no pitching at all really in between on Saturday. Just a bad overall showing top to bottom for Texas.
Yeah, Friday felt like what I thought this series would be. And when I predicted originally what was going to happen, I thought we would go 2-1. Woe was me for making predictions. We'd go 2-1 in this one. And I thought there was a good chance we might lose Friday and win Saturday and Sunday. Friday was our closest to winning. We didn't get that one, but it definitely felt like on the weekend games, the Saturday and Sunday, they were a lot closer than the final scores kind of indicate. They weren't. But up until, if you took two innings out of that weekend, basically OSU scored 14 of their 24 runs in two innings, the sixth on Saturday and the seventh on Sunday. And look, there's tons to not like. There's tons to be alarmed by. Texas doesn't have a number next to their name. They started the season number one. I'm not here to try to sugarcoat that or sunshine pump that. It's awful. It's terrible. They need to figure something out and figure it out quick. I think fans need to adjust their expectations. You know, players who aren't named Melendez might need to adjust their expectations of what the difference between playing on a number one team and whatever number they might finish the season with. Look, I think they're still one of the 25 best teams in the country. I think they're still one of the 15 best teams in the country. I think Oklahoma State is really good. But Texas got their keister handed to them at the dish, which is not something we are used to. But yeah, I mean, it started Friday, and that's exactly what I thought this series would be, was just, it was like a heavyweight boxing match. It just felt like as one, you know, landed a big blow, the other came back, right? It was tied 1-1, 4-4, then 6-6. They kind of answered every time until the ninth, when Aaron Nixon gave up two runs in the ninth and Texas couldn't get two themselves. It was a tough loss, but that felt like, okay, all right, let's get ready for a good series. And then the good series just never really came.
It was good for one team, but definitely not the one sure. that were in the right shade of orange. But I saw somebody tweeting about it on Saturday, and it made a lot of sense to me. It's like Texas, we knew what Texas had in the starting pitching going into the year, and we had questions about the bullpen. There was velocity there, but placement was going to be the question, and it just wasn't developed. We didn't know. And asking and hoping that your bullpen develops midseason is just not a winning proposition. And that's been why Texas has been losing games, because the bullpen just doesn't seem to have the placement or the control. And part of that is Lucas Gordon being pulled from the bullpen and placed in a starting pitching role. Lucas Gordon could be a guy that comes into the bullpen and carries you for a couple of innings, but instead, because of an injury, had to be pulled out of the bullpen and is now starting on Sunday, and has looked like over the last couple of weeks the most consistent of the three starters Texas has. Like Lucas Gordon, you've been able to set your watch to him. He's going to give up a couple of hits, going to give up a couple of runs, but he's going to give you a chance to win a ball game. And Texas just fumbled the bag. It's insane to be handed a 7-0 lead and walk out with a loss. Like there's no world in which that should exist. Like if that, like people like to put the Augie Garrido video on things. And if you don't know the Augie Garrido video, look up the Augie Garrido video. This is inexcusable. Like this is the most Augie Garrido video moment of life, period. Like if you think that is acceptable performance, then multiple people, not just your head coach, but multiple people have failed you. And like that to me is just emblematic of the season. It seems like Texas puts itself in prime position and then finds a way to fall apart in the end.
Yeah. I mean, like I alluded to, right, in that Sunday game, it felt like something we've had before, the Tech series, for instance, where it's been an ugly series, but we salvaged something with a good Sunday answer. This team, you know, Gordon is a good enough starter to start for most teams Friday, Saturday, and was the fourth starter, right, for Texas starting the year. And it was like, okay, that's what we kind of feel comfortable with, is we know we might not have the top end. There might be something missing from what we thought it was, but we got a good Sunday. Then, yeah, even that cratered for the first time this season, where we had been able to win Sundays, basically, not on because of Gordon, right? He was great. Struck out a career high 11, retired 13 straight batters between the second and sixth innings, had a 7-0 lead, ended up giving up a couple, but the bullpen just cratered behind him. I mean, that big, where they had 10 runs in one inning, I think they did it on four hits, Gerald. They had seven people with free passes during that. I mean, that's like, that's brutal. That's just, you can't put that on the coaches. Can't put that on anyone. That's just the bullpen not going out and executing. They tried three different guys in that inning and couldn't get out of it. You know, that's, it was just utterly brutal. The bats up to that point had been good, right? They'd hit a couple home runs. They had a back-to-back-to-back. Ardoin, Messenger, Campbell. I mean, the bats looked good, especially after being pretty much shut out on Saturday. They lost 14-3 into the Saturday game, but that was one where, you know, again, OSU went from a 3-0 lead where Stevens looked like he was dealing except the one home run he was giving up every inning. He'd strike out two guys and give one home run, which, you know, all right. But then when you give up 10 in an inning, it looked tough. But look, Texas was no hit until the fifth. Silas Ardwin gets a walk. And the sixth, they load the bases up after giving up 10. It's like, okay, they're going to have some fight. And then when they didn't score there, I said, oh, man, the series is over. Like, they could get swept. I thought right then, like, oh, man, they weren't able to answer. It was just bad. I mean, like I said, you had two pitchers. Steven struck out a career high 8. Gordon struck out a career high 11. I mean, they were dealing. They just couldn't keep the ball in the park, giving up some home runs in Steven's case. They couldn't get the bullpen relief when the starters came out. And the bats, while they were, you know, they were good Friday and Sunday, not great, but good, they weren't there Saturday. And, you know, the other team hit the ball out of our park, which, again, is not a thing we're used to. But both teams are doing it. Texas set the record, yay, for home runs in a season this weekend. You know, like, they obviously have been putting the ball out, but they've – I would have to look at the stats for seasons they've given up this many home runs as well. So, I mean, it's tough altogether. I'm not ready to write Hanson off. I still think Friday's good. You had the last five Big 12 Pitcher of the Week awards between Hanson and Justin Campbell. Campbell's a top 20 draft pick. Like, that was sure. Melendez went 4-for-5 with a homer in that game. There was good things individually. Messenger had two home runs in that game. There was individual good things. It felt like in this game, right? That Friday night game, for instance, Messenger, two home runs, both solo home runs. Silas Ardwan batting in front of him went 0-for-4. That's tough, right? You just think if he's able to get a walk like he does, if they're able to extend an inning, any one of those Messenger or either of those two Messenger hits could be the home run that won that game for him. Sometimes you just get unlucky, but it didn't feel like Saturday or Sunday was luck. It felt like something is rotten in the state of Denmark.
And I don't know what it is. I have no clue what it is. And Kyle, if you and I had the answer to that question, well, we wouldn't be behind microphones. We'd be probably in front of them being asked questions. There's just, we came into the season feeling like Texas was going to be one thing, and things fell apart pretty quickly. But it's not just for Texas. There are, you know, six of the preseason top 10, including Texas, are currently unranked. And you've got teams like Oklahoma State and A&M who are flying up the rankings that people didn't necessarily... Oklahoma State had expectations. Like, A&M didn't have expectations at all. So yeah. It's been a weird year. There's been a lot of parity in college baseball. And
except Tennessee. There's parity for second place. Tennessee is so much better than everybody else right now.
And it's insane to think about that, like, what, 90 days ago, we were talking about Texas dominating Tennessee. Like, what happened to that team? And I know we know some things that happened to it, but I think fans are just going to have to get on board and get okay with Texas being on the road in the NCAA tournament and having to battle through a road regional and potentially a super regional thing, get out of the regional. That's just what fans are going to have to get on board with at this point, unless they win basically the rest of the season from here on out, including the Big 12 tournament.
Yeah. Win out, and that's your answer. So this does provide you a way out. A lot of sports, you know, I'm a fan, unfortunately, of Manchester United in soccer. There is no way for them to get Champions League soccer. There's just not enough season left. They can't do anything miraculous enough. Texas does have that. They do have, it's the much harder route, but yeah, they win out, win the Big 12 tournament, you're hosting. Probably, likely, most likely, you will. But it's hard, you know. Just don't lose another game. That's much easier said than done. Who do they got coming up?
So next up for Texas, they've got Houston Baptist. I think, what are they, the Huskies? HBU Huskies?
Yeah.
It's always weird to me when Texas schools are the Huskies, but that's neither here nor there. HBU at home before taking on West Virginia on the road in Morgantown.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
So there was a big week of roster moves and potential roster moves for Texas heading into last week. And as the portal deadline, the May 1st deadline for a guaranteed one-time transfer for 2022 approached, Texas was at least six-ish over the 85-man scholarship limit for 2022. And so they needed some folks to hit the portal. And part of that is because, well, Texas signed 28 2022 players and has five currently committed transfer players with things on the way. Texas lost a couple of names, a couple of bodies that honestly we didn't anticipate, but they got to or below 85 because of it from the 2021. We'll start with the oldest, 2019, Myron Warren and Marcus Washington both announced their departure for 2020. Kelvonte Dixon, Dejon Harrison, and Jaden Hullaby. Jahdae Barron still remains to be seen with about 24 hours left or so on the transfer window as the time. So let me explain that. That's weird. It takes about 48 hours for your name to show up in the portal. So if you enter it in at the right before the deadline, then your name will show up 2 days after the deadline.
There is some reporting at the time of recording this Monday night that's been put out that says he did in fact enter the portal, but plans to take it out or already has. Again, we're recording this in a time of brief flux, but I believe Anwar put that out there, that there is nothing purely official, but some reporting that seems to be the case. So Jahdae Barron, as of recording, is a Texas Longhorn.
Yeah. Fingers crossed, right? So Jahdae Barron, 2020, 2021, David Abiara, defensive end, D lineman, Jordan Thomas. And then that actually, there are two others that transferred earlier in the year, Terrence Cooks and Keith Arlee. But this week, that marks
this week
that made room under the 85-person roster cap for Texas. Part of the reason why is Texas is hoping to add some more folks. O'Shawn Mathis was supposed to be one, but then somehow, I'm not sure why, but he was strong Texas lean for basically the entirety of his recruitment. And then the day before, I don't know, something changed. We're just speculating at this point. Something changed right before, and he made the commitment to Nebraska. So we'll see how that turned out. But the roster churn has been real this week, Kyle.
Four players out of the 2021 class is maybe the more interesting thing to me, right? You mentioned Terrence Cooks and Keith Runley joining or being joined by ABR and Jordan Thomas. Thomas was a player who wasn't with the team last year for personal reasons, and then now is entering the portal. So those guys have 4 years of eligibility left, which is almost the more interesting case. Like, it feels like they didn't maybe give it the shot. But, you know, it is what it is. It feels like some of these other players maybe saw, as we anticipated, the depth chart and were processed, told they weren't going to play and should look elsewhere. Maybe they, you know, themselves, I think Marcus Washington probably was a guy who the coaches would have liked to have, but decided he wanted to be a starter somewhere. And I can understand all of those perspectives. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. The transfer portal is new, right? We are in the Wild West. We've said that. We know that. Everyone has an NIL take. It's fine. But, we did kind of, you know, we had a coach come in and say 33 new players, right? He didn't shy away from that before all of this happened, right? He signed a big class, went after five guys in the portal. You knew some people were going to have to leave. And again, it's a little unfair, maybe, and the only time I'll say this to Tom Herman and Charlie Strong, but he's the third coach to come in, Sark, that is, who said, you know, I'm gonna change the culture. I'm gonna rebuild. I'm gonna do something different. And again, having the access to the portal obviously makes that easier to be very noticeable. But this is the most tangible step we've had really since Mack Brown left of a singular program changing, kind of clearing, 1 year sweeping change. Right? I mean, again, not every coach had the portal, and you think, oh, it takes 3 years to get their guys when they recruit them. But the new state of college coaching is you basically have players as restricted free agents, right? You have 1 year contracts and you got to win them back, right? It's like, you know, I date my wife every day, you know, wake up and choose that life to be together. You know, you gotta woo these guys. So it's interesting. I don't know if it's good or it's bad. It's different. And so, yeah, I think good for Sark that this was what he said was going to happen. He said there was going to be some changes. It feels like there's going to be a lot more of the Sark type of guys. Remember, the first Sark guy, the Sark recruit, the guy that he said, I want him, I'm going to get him, I made it happen, was Xavier Worthy. And
turned out okay.
Lord willing, Yeah, yeah, turned out okay, and turned down Oregon. You know, Lord willing, the creek don't rise. He's here for two more years, right? He finishes his time before he's eligible for the NFL, just in the burnt orange. But he has the type of talent, you know, to play on Sundays, and that's the first start guy. And he came in and did 1,000 yards in his first year. You always say it, give the coaches their guys and then see what happens. And so I'm not saying the pressure is more on Sark because he has the ability to speed up his timeline. But, you know, let's see an improvement this year and see the vision a little bit more with some of your guys. But, you know, credit to him. We talked about roster churn. He did it.
And we'll talk about it more on Thursday, in our Thursday show, just kind of talking about just the state of college football and through the lens of Texas roster churn. But I think, I mean, Sark came in from day one and talked about it. This is less about changing the culture, like the guys that are going out, and more about changing the way the roster is structured. Like, Sark came in and made jokes about how there were more wide receivers than offensive linemen on the roster. And like, so he made the comment about we may have 33 new guys in next fall in November. So the numbers have been there for about 6 months, but the plan has been there probably since day one. And I think that's the thing we all have to keep in mind, is that this was probably the plan and this was probably the idea. And you know what? It's not the way I would like to see these things done, especially seeing kids, for lack of a better term, you know, being shown the door. I respect the coaches giving them honest evaluations in their exit interviews and letting them know where they stand before that deadline hit. Like, I respect that. But again, it's a little more cutthroat than my taste, but that's my personal preference. It's kind of how the game is, and it's why I'm never going to be a high-level college football coach. One of the many reasons I'll never be a high-level college football coach. But, like, this is part of what it is now. It's part of what it is going to be moving forward. And I think this will be the only time, hopefully, that Sark has to do this, because the roster now more resembles what he wants it to be, especially with the composition of the 2022 class, with a third of it being offensive and defensive linemen. Like, that, the roster is going to start resembling what Sark wants to see. And hopefully that shows dividends on the field. And in there, I had a conversation with somebody about the emphasis that clearly has happened this offseason is preparing Texas not just for 2022, but when the transition happens to the SEC, whether it's 23 or 24 or even 25, get it together, broke OU, like, whenever it happens, this season and this offseason is positioning Texas not just for the next 12 months, but hopefully for the next 12 years.
Agreed. Big boys. Everyone loves big humans. Get the big bodies, brunch with the bigs, pancake factory. Like, yeah, focus on the bigs. If you're going to go to the SEC, get speed at your skill positions. Check. Get a bunch of giant big bodies who like to push people around. I'm going to give it a half check, right? We think we got them. We'll see, because that's a tough position to check. But yeah, I mean, like you said, when you have more wide receivers than offensive linemen, something in your composition isn't quite right. Sign six offensive linemen, I think have had five, maybe six even, wide receivers. And we'll talk about it when we look at who's gone and what's going on. But they have flipped basically those positions, brought a couple new guys in, but sent a lot of other people out. So as always, we wish anyone luck as in their future careers. They go on wherever they land.
So speaking of future careers, Texas shut out of the NFL draft, but had eight guys sign with teams either as undrafted free agents or invited to a minicamp to compete for a spot. Josh Thompson, Denzel Okafor ended up in Jacksonville. Brendan Schooler, I made jokes about him being a New England Patriots type guy. He's a New England Patriot currently. Cameron Dicker out to the LA Rams. Cade Brewer in Seattle. Derek Kerstetter with the Buffalo Bills. And then Darian Dunn, New York Jets rookie minicamp invite. Jacoby Jones, New Orleans Saints minicamp invite as well. Strong chance he might make the most of that opportunity. He's a guy that Texas would have loved to have with its edge issues this last year.
Yeah, it's interesting, right, Joe? If you do the thought exercise of what if this wasn't a 5-win team, like what if this was an 8 or 9-win team and that was your class who was leaving? I honestly think if we were a 9-win team, there's a couple names added to this list who decided to come back, right, get some more tape, and hopefully, again, just be on a better team. You're going to have more players drafted. But still, when you look at this, the names that maybe stand out is if we are a 9-win team, that probably means Kerstetter has a slightly better year. But I think maybe Kerstetter is a guy who could have been drafted. Dicker was good, a two-way punter and kicker, and one of our likeliest players to get drafted. But again, you're a special teams player. It's some years it happens. Many years the best kicker or punter don't get drafted. So that was always kind of a toss-up. I think Josh Thompson is probably the guy who suffered most. I think if Texas was a good team, you would have seen him be at least like a fifth or sixth round kind of pick, because he's got good 40 time, good measurables, and again would have played on a good team even if the defense wasn't great last year. If you found a way to win those games, the rose looks a little nicer bloom on it. Everything's a little sunnier. I don't know that Jones, Dunn, Schooler, who apparently tested really, really well, but I don't know that any of those guys. Okafor has sheer size, but again, the line was tough last year. I don't think two guys are getting drafted no matter what. I don't think Brewer was getting drafted. So I think it's more about the fact that DeMarvian Overshown came back for another year, that Bijan has another year for sure in college. Like, there are a lot of players who have upside who didn't leave, because again, you don't want to leave on five wins if you don't have to, right? Just the chances of you getting drafted from a better team are better. So yes, it's bad. There's no doubt. You don't ever want this to happen. But again, if Texas is winning 8, 9, 10 games every year, I don't think this is going to happen. And I think the more talented players who are back for super senior COVID years, and there's more than even I rattled off, but might not be back because they might get better draft grades.
And I think Texas, again, like you said, won't be shut out of the draft in 2023. I mean, it may just be Bijan, but that likelihood is pretty low. You mentioned DeMarvian Overshown. There's some defensive backs that probably somebody could take a flyer on in a late round. Offensive lineman, maybe, you know, who knows? Another year under Kyle Flood, and some of these guys may blossom into an NFL prospect. So Texas, not much else to say there, but things possibly and probably looking up in the future. And again, this will be something that we talk about that comes up in the Thursday show as we talk about kind of the roster changes and the churn and the current state of college. But now it's part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus, giving you a little bit of highlight into the other things going on, and we down the 40. This on any other week would probably have been a main segment in the show, but there's just so much that happened this week. Sunday night, via Instagram, Longhorn legend, should have his number retired, Andrew Jones, announced that he is declaring for the NBA draft. He signed with Texas way back when, in Shaka Smart's, I think, first recruiting class or second recruiting class, as the number 26th player in the country, McDonald's All-American, all of the accolades, finished the team third in scoring as a freshman, like looked the entire part, but was diagnosed with leukemia his sophomore year. Following, he was evaluated for a broken wrist and missed the remainder of that season, and has been nothing short of an inspiration and a story of perseverance, and after came back and played four games between rounds of chemo, and then went out for the remainder of the year, came back and had back-to-back all-conference seasons following his kind of clear all his having a medical clearance to play again, finishes his career as number 9 all time in school history as a scorer. Like, and this is whatever, I'm just going to say it. Like, I got emotional. I was the one that wrote the mm-hmm. Andrew Jones is leaving story for BON. And my wife was like, are you okay? And I was like, no, I'm not. Like, I'm not there. But like the legacy that this guy is leaving, regardless of what he does after this, like, dude, is one of the greatest of all time in my book.
Yeah, and I mean, there's the Freddie Steinmark kind of Longhorn story that gets made into a movie that people read books and cry when they watch the movie for years to come. You know, there's that treatment that I think certainly fits here. The fact that he not only is an inspiration for his journey off the court, but both before and after was like legitimately, if not our best player for every year, you know, one of our top two or three players. It's just crazy, right? It is insane. There is no world which I think his jersey doesn't deserve to be in the rafters. When we tweeted it out, it was kind of interesting to see other fan bases, TCU fans, Oklahoma State fans, retweeted or comment and talk about the fact that they will root harder for Andrew Jones than, you know, anyone they can think of who is an alum of their school, right? He is effectively universally beloved, and he earned that, right? Because there's one thing that cuts through the color of your jersey and the team that you sing the school song for. It's the human struggle and human triumph and the things that seem impossible and absolutely doing them. And yeah, I've cried the day he came back.
Yep.
And played his first game. I mean, like the day his teammates held his jersey up when they won that crazy game at the buzzer for him, basically, when he wasn't playing, and held up his jersey, I cried. Yep. Like it touches a nerve. But I'm also excited. You know, I don't understand the rules, could have come back for like an 11th season. He wasn't that 2016 class. I'm so glad he's going to the next level. He's earned it. I want all the success for him. He is a true Longhorn legend. The crazy thing to think about, Gerald, he was recruited in one of Texas's all-time best classes with another five-star, basically, player in Jarrett Allen, two McDonald's All-Americans. Jarrett Allen has played how many seasons in the NBA, Gerald?
Is it like it's three or four?
The 2021-2022 season with his second team, the Cleveland Cavaliers, is his second year in Cleveland. It is his sixth in the NBA.
My gosh.
So it's just, you know, it's wild to put into perspective when you think about that. The guy has, I don't even know, probably 1,000 career blocks already, you know, and now his recruiting classmate is taking the next step in the journey. Whatever happens, we will cheer for Andrew Jones as a human, as a professional, as a basketball player, as whatever it is, whatever he does, in his next however many years, we will be incredible fans. Just an all-time Longhorn.
When they bring him back to retire his jersey, I'm going to cry. When they bring him back to be an assistant coach, I'm going to cry. When they make the movie of him coming back to play basketball, I'm going to cry, because it's going to be like if Rudy was actually good at the sport he was supposed to play.
Gerald, who would you cast as Andrew Jones if that movie was made today? Obviously, people will change in 10 years when they make the movie. Who would you cast?
Ooh, that's a tough one. The problem is everybody in Hollywood is short, but Caleb McLaughlin from Stranger Things, a.k.a. the black kid from Stranger Things, would be somebody that I would probably look at. I like him. He's not exceptionally tall, but he's kind of built like Andrew Jones, long arms, kind of skinny, but looks like he could explode on a basketball court if needed to. Now I'm like Googling how tall Caleb McLaughlin is, like I'm a 14-year-old girl. but it's fine. It's okay. Oh, he's 6'1". We could totally... Oh, he's 5'8". No, he's 5'8".
No, 5'8" is tough.
5'8" is definitely tough. You know what? Tom Cruise has done action movies for a long time, and he's about that height, too. That's either here or there. A guy who's not short, Dylan Disu, declared for the NBA draft, but is probably not hiring an agent, not leaving likely, probably going to make his way back to campus after getting some feedback from the process.
Gerald, the answer, by the way, was Jamie Hector, a.k.a. Marlo Stanfield from The Wire. I don't know how tall he is. But Dylan Disu, he is tall, and Texas will need him. And look, I've made predictions on here, hundreds of them, and maybe one or two of them have not come true. I think I said Mitchell Daly would have a breakout year at the plate for the Longhorn baseball team. But I really think people are underestimating Dylan Disu. I think the potential is there. I think he was never fully healthy from his injury this year. I'm hoping a year in the system, understanding that Texas needs that big. He has the ability to be a shot blocker, to be a rebounder, that he can step into that role. I really think Disu has the chance to, you know, to be one of the, you know, four or five best bigs in the Big 12 next year. If he can take that step up, I think that I'm not saying he will absolutely, but if he can take that step up, I think Texas, you know, can really go far with the team. So though I think it's unlikely that he will get drafted, I am hoping that he will come back. I also think that there is a good chance that he takes a big step up next year.
Again, we've been saying it all offseason. I think there's with the talent coming in and the positional plans and the spots that they're in, I think a lot of guys are going to take a step forward next year. Speaking of a team that's taking a step forward, number 16 softball closes out the Texas Tech Red Raiders 3-game sweep. It was a narrow, kind of tight one on Sunday and Friday, really. But Texas sweeps Texas Tech. they were already solidified in third place in the conference, but it always feels good to come away with a sweep.
That's right. And I don't know. There's something about UT and Texas coaches that just it rubs people the wrong way. So after this sweep, Texas Tech announced Monday morning they were firing their entire softball staff. So you hate to see it. Texas Tech's women basketball coach has gotten on the wrong side of Vic Schaefer's ire. Obviously, their basketball fans are great for interactions with Texas social media. They keep bumping us up the interactions chart. And now we fired their softball coach. So it's a tough combination with them. Oh, and I think maybe a couple games after where they fired their football coach after we hung 75 on them. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. We're talking about softball. And you're right. Haley Dolcini was great to get the win Friday and came in and also got the win on Sunday, came in for four innings in that one. So I really like this team, you know, after a tough Oklahoma State series, coming back and getting it right, and you know they're going to need pitching. Like that's what's going to be the difference if they can do something in the postseason. So it's not just Dolcini, Sophia Simpson, Estelle Check. I mean, there's multiples who we want to see really hit their peak at the right time. But again, I think that this squad will go as far as your ace takes you, and right now Dolcini is that.
You know, she had a great outing on Friday. Actually struggled a little bit on Sunday, but Estelle Check came in relief and really closed things out, even though Dolcini got the win. But Texas now closes out regular season play with Baylor, who is, I think, 5-10 in conference play so far. So hopefully that one is a drama-free weekend before heading into the NCAA tournament. Texas really legitimately is just stuck in third place. There's no way that they can move up. OU and OSU are both 14-1 in conference. OU's one is Texas, though. Suck it, Sooners. They play this weekend for the Big 12 title, so basically whoever wins that series will win the Big 12 title, lock in that one seed. Texas locked in at a three seed for the Big 12 tournament here happening in a couple of weeks. Number one, rowing, does what they do and swept not one, not two, but three ranked teams, plus UCLA was there as well. Big margins for all but really one of the five races that they won this week.
Yeah, and my favorite thing to see always is when a Longhorn B team comes in second place of any of the races, which was the case with the third eight. But yeah, when you have the home waters, you have to protect it, and it seems with near double digits in the pinnacle, right? The first eight, the biggest of the races, 12-second win there over some ranked opponents shows good things. Rowing is, they're pretty incredible.
Doing big things. Number one, track and field. They were at two different locations this weekend. The distance team was at the kind of legendary Penn Relays, while everybody else was at the LSU Invitational. The Penn Relays, Texas won two distance events. Yassine Abdallah won the 5,000 meter, which is just absolutely too many meters, while the team of Yusuf Bismana, Cruz Gomez Abdallah, and Creighton Carroza took the 4x mile relay, which again, far too many miles for me.
Yeah, it's driving distance at that point. No, out of a field of 90, Yassine was the only one to break 13 minutes and 50 seconds, which again, if my map says that, and there's a drive option, you know, I might probably drive. Get there in six.
That's 3 miles he ran in under 14 minutes. There are cities in which you can't drive 3 miles in 14 minutes. Some of you live in cities where you can't drive 3 miles in 14 minutes. Everybody else was at the LSU Invitational. The women's team broke the program record in the 4x1 en route to a victory. It was their own record, but that's neither here nor there. The 4x4 team set a stadium record in their win. Tyra Gittins yawn wins the high jump again. Crystal Herpin won the discus. Jonathan Jones yawn broke another record, second fastest time. And then Tripp Perry won his fourth straight shot put event. Texas might bring home another natty in this whole track and field thing. What do you think, Kyle?
Gerald, you pessimist to say only one natty. That's number one men's and number one women's. I mean, we've had a tough show up to this point. Drink that Kool-Aid in and just know that we need a positive thing here towards the end. They're going to win two natties right here. That women's 4x1, by the way, is the not only they break the program record, they also have the fastest time in the country. So you're talking about some national champions. You're talking about some you know, individual and team national champion numbers all around here. So really good, men's and women's, just elite all over the place.
Speaking of elite, that was the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So, Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
I wasn't sure what I wanted to bang the drum on. I went back and forth a couple of times, and so I'm going to tie a couple things together here.
I like when you make unrelated things related for your bang the drum.
These ones are related, actually, but it's a different way of looking at a couple things. And I'm talking, going back to the well of baseball. There was a moment that was ridiculous in a weekend of ridiculous in the Sunday game, where if, you know, you're obviously familiar with the dish. Most of it is turf and fake dirt, but obviously the pitcher's mound is real dirt. But apparently, somewhere around the second inning, Oklahoma State's pitcher and coaches decided the dirt just wasn't right dirt. They'd been pitching on it all weekend, but something wasn't right. So they huddled. Pierce had to come out. That's right. They looked at the mound and delayed the game, and it was ridiculous. And one of my favorite images, Coach David Pierce, a man who's probably fed up with the weekend in general and fed up with this Sunday nonsense, goes out and is raking the dirt himself. He basically said, "You don't like it? Give me the rake. I'll fix it." So there's a picture floating on social media of him working a rake, which was amazing. But A, I loved that. B, I loved that immediately after that, after they raked the mound, that's when Texas went back-to-back-to-back with three home runs on the next three batters. So also loved that. Obviously didn't love the weekend, but look, I don't know if that's a sense of humor or a sense of frustration from Coach Pierce, but Tennessee has four losses this season. One of them was Texas with their ace. Since that game, Tanner Witt was scheduled to pitch the next game and could not. It may have also been the game that I went to this season, so there may be some cursing that I did. But since that Tanner Witt injury, Texas is barely above 500 this season. They started out 11-0. They're 20-16 since. It's not been easy for David Pierce. When you're the number one team and you have, you know, a big injury that shakes up kind of the foundation of your pitching rotation, 20-16, barely above 500 ball is tough. This is a long year for him. But I've also seen people online calling for Coach Pierce's seat to get hot, which is wild. I've seen people online really targeting their ire towards Sean Allen. Let's remember that Sean Allen won the Assistant Coach of the Year award for having the lowest ERA of any team in the country 1 year ago. And people are saying this is all his fault. Our pitchers, they suck. Pierce can't run a rotation. They both need to go. And I feel the frustration. It's a tough year. It's a tough season. It's up there in the running for most disappointing. Basketball had big expectations, but they weren't number one. Football, we bought the hype of a new coach. Everything's going to be fixed, and it was tough. Baseball with a number one ranking might be our toughest season. We'll see how it ends. But guys, I plead, and I'm sure it's no one who listens to this podcast, but please don't be that person. Like, the Texas meltdown and overreaction to every event, if we don't sign a recruit, if someone's in the portal, if we lose a game, if we don't win every single national championship, I know we joke about that, but there will be tough days, there will be tough games, there will be losses. It's okay. We will fight another day. We will never get to the point where we win every game in every sport all the way across the board. Like, we're gonna have ups, we're gonna have downs, but I have faith in the direction. I do think that there needs to be some results across these big three revenue sports. I think you have three fantastic coaches, and I think Pierce right now has the best track record of any of them. So guys, please pump the brakes, and gals, pump the brakes. Like, take a breath, maybe a Xanax, whatever it is. Just relax a little bit. Go out, get some sunshine, come back. It'll all be okay. Even if we don't win a national championship, It'll all be okay.
Just touch some grass, guys. Touch some grass. Maybe put this podcast in your earbuds and go touch some grass. We'll have a nice discussion on Thursday that definitely probably will make your blood boil, but that's fine. I mean, people were calling for Pierce's head at the beginning of last year, and Texas was a couple of pitches away from playing for a national championship. And so patience and Texas fans don't always go together. In fact, they very rarely do, unless running out of is before immediately in front of the word patience. But I think it's got to be, you don't expect your Sunday starter to go down completely throwing off your rotation. Like, that's not something you can plan for necessarily. And while there are issues with the bullpen, I think there are a lot bigger and other things happening than just warming up the seat of a coach who took Texas to the brink of playing for a national championship a year ago. I'm banging the drum this week on my favorite drum to beat. This week has been wild with transfers, with NIL rumors and rumors of players being paid and all of those things. And frankly, I don't necessarily care where you fall on the issue. You know, when you get Clarence Thomas and Sonia Sotomayor to agree that the system is messed up, then you know the system is messed up and something needs to change. And a lot of people are blaming the NIL rule changing, destroying college football and all of these things. And it boggles my mind that people continue to blame the rule and not those in charge of making the rules for their lack of actually making rules to make this thing not be terrible. The NIL rule is not a bad rule, and it's honestly, the vast majority of things that are happening in the NIL front are not this, right? Somebody paid Bryce Foster $1,000 to be the flower girl at their wedding. Like, that's hilarious, right? NIL is the kid that caught the game-winning pass against Texas getting a deal with the local Applebee's for some free apps and a $50 gift card, right? Like, that's what NIL is for the vast majority of it. It's allowing female athletes to capitalize on their 1.5 million Instagram following to monetize. It's the NCAA not shutting down people's YouTube channels because they just happen to also be a college athlete, even though they don't mention that on their YouTube channel. They're just playing Roblox or something stupid. I don't even remember what it was. But, like, that's what NIL is. And so Jordan Addison is getting all the buzz, right? Oregon or USC or whoever trying to poach Texas players for hundreds of thousands of dollars is getting the headlines. But the vast majority of what NIL is doing is what it's intended to do. And so the fault is not on the NIL rules. It's the fault on the NCAA for continuing to be an organization that refuses to protect college athletics from itself. Because it's been a money business for a very long time. The first time a coach got paid, it became a money business. And coaches, because they're competitive people, are going to do whatever they can within the realm of the law to gain a competitive advantage. Since the first forward pass has been thrown, that is the story of football, is finding the creases in the rules to find a competitive advantage. So the fault is not NIL rules, because you know what? That kid, Jordan Whittington, getting his teeth whitened for free because he posted it on Instagram, is not destroying college football. The NCAA itself, for a long time, has not done its job to protect college athletics from itself. And that is the major failing of all of this.
I understand that people are very upset that everything, that college football is changing, that Jordan Addison got a deal that's never been heard of, and oh, whoa, is college football, look what's happened. Guys, all this, the only thing that's happened is Reggie Bush's deal is now on the table. Like, USC has been offering that exact package, a couple million in a house and some perks for your parents for years.
20 years now, guys.
Oklahoma did that. SMU, love Coach Nivar. I saw him post a picture of they're busting out the Trans Am, like they're leaning into it. Everyone, except UT, of course, has never done that. But every other school has done this for years. Nothing has changed. It's just visible. And if that if you love the charade, if you love the sleight of hand where you don't see it and you get to clutch your pearls and you get to look down your nose, then I do feel for you, because that has changed. It is a bit more transparent these days. And sometimes people don't like the bright lights. They like to watch the movie with the house lights down, so you don't have to see the sticky stuff on the floor, what it is, right? Like, you don't want, actually ended up being a fantastic analogy, you don't want to know, you don't want to see it, let me just enjoy the show. Nothing's changed.
And that's all we've got for you this week. We're going to talk more about roster churn and just the current state of Texas and college football on Thursday. But Kyle, between then and now, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carbon. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
You can follow me on Twitter. I am at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, the Longhorn Republic. Or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. And until next time, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. I'm so sorry I went to that UCLA baseball game.